Welcome to Down the Yellow Brick Pod, your ticket somewhere over the rainbow and down many a yellow brick rabbit hole for all royal revisionists and fans of Oz to fall down together.
Today, you've landed in our Slipperhood series, where we interview many of the magical folks who identify with or have stepped into the legacy of the sparkly shoes, no matter if they are silver or ruby red, in a Broadway caliber production or homemade from the heart.
May Oz continue to connect us across gender identities, generations, and cultures, thanks to things like recognizable gingham, and inspire our next steps today. Quincy Brown from Hawaii and Kevin Bianchi from New Jersey have been friends since their fateful meet cute beneath a huge picture of Tony Award winner Stephanie J. Block. Back then, they were just two wicked gays bickering about musical theater whenever they got the chance. These days, they are better known as the creators and co-hosts of Sentimental Men, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the women of musical theater with a special emphasis on Wicked's green girlies.
Listeners, hello MK and hello Sent Men Pod, dream guests of ours. We have Kevin and Quincy in the house. Welcome to Down the YBP.
Hello. Hi. We're so excited to be here.
Yes, this feels good.
This does feel really good. We were trying to remember how we found your podcast. I mean, The pandemic was prime time for podcasts popping off. And I think our friend Justin at the Oz Recap may have shared something of yours. And I was like, wait, what? There's a Wicked podcast? I was like, why didn't I know about this? And then I was hooked, instantly hooked. What you guys are doing is so cool and unique. And I actually think it's giving like a core to the Wicked fandom where there was no core. You know, like besides in like comments on YouTube or something, but you all are so much better than that. You know, like it's like, this is like what we need. Like we need like voices talking about Wicked in this way that is so like delightful. And I've loved what you've been doing with the girls that you have on, especially the Wicked girls. I know it's like for leading ladies all across the board, but like the Elphabas and Glindas, like this peel behind the curtain of the processes, how they get there, how each of their journeys is different. It's so cool. We highly recommend. And now we can't wait to like fangirl over you guys because we just adore the pod. We adored meeting you at the Oz Dust Ballroom. What a meeting place.
So much fun.
Oh my gosh, I still talk about you guys' little kinky ruby slippers, your little kinky boots.
Thank you.
Betsy Johnson.
Was the Oz Dust Ballroom what you were expecting it to be? We had no idea what we were going to walk into.
It was like a wedding reception slash fancy prom slash like
slash Wicked Coachella.
It was kind of everything Wicked Coachella.
Wicked Coachella. I thought it felt like Elfie and Glinda's wedding, if they ever had one.
Oh my gosh.
Interesting.
I thought it was fun. Like, I don't think I had any expectation.
Yeah, it ended up being so much fun.
And you guys were the MCs. How did that feel? Yeah. Let's start with this, because it is like, did you ever think you'd be hosting the Oz Dust Ballroom event? Broadway Con, when you started this pod, like, was that any, like, that's where we can go with this?
No, I think when we started this pod, I have always been so insecure about this podcast. When we started, I was like, truly no one's going to listen to this. Like, Kevin, we should level set our expectations and we're going to do this for us. Yeah. It'll be a nice, fun little passion project that we do, but no one's going to actually listen to it because it felt too niche. But I think what we have learned on this journey is that, like, the Wicked niche is very large.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are websites like I said, devoted.
We need leaders. It's like we need the claw. The claw. Like everyone needs the leader in this.
Well, it's like interesting. I feel like the Wicked fandom like sustains itself and like operates on its own. And then I like to think that our podcast just gave everyone one common place to like convene around all these topics.
Yeah. And I think the nice thing too about the, like you're saying, Quincy, it's the fan or the fandom kind of sustaining itself is now when the show gets a new fan, when a 12-year-old hears it for the first time, now they have 20 years of back catalog to absorb. Mm-hmm. Whereas like not every show has that. You know, it's like sometimes you become a fan of a show, maybe there's two or three casts for you to kind of compare and contrast. Yep. And I think that's something that we try to do with our podcast as well, is to kind of anthologize the Green Girlies of Wicked.
Yes, because it really
is. And a couple pink girls.
And a couple pink girls in there. Because it really is like the Olympian gold medalist role of Broadway. Mm-hmm. Like to play this role in whatever capacity is like quite a feat. And like where these women go after where they were before, it's also fascinating. Like it's just so, it really is just like nutrients for the ear, like to listen, especially like as two people who are on our own Yellow Brick Roads, Em and I, in musical theater. And like there is no... like there is no wizard at the end of the day. Like it is just like you swerve around and you land where you land, which is so cool. Okay.
Yeah. How did you two start this podcast?
Pandemic, baby. We had the idea before the pandemic, but I don't think it would have started without the pandemic, just really and having the shutdown and having the time, because we were never really in the same spot.
We lived together. Tara was like always working.
I never work here.
Gigs, and we would voice memo and be like Aussie things and like, oh, I started reading the original Baum 14 books, and then she wanted to start reading, and so it was glimmering. And then once she came home off a gig early, unfortunately, it was like, all right, let's do this. This is the time.
Mm-hmm. We were saying like we were closeted Oz fans, and then the podcast outed us.
Really?
Like, it really, we never really were part of any community with any of this.
Come out wherever you are.
I feel like I've been surprised to see how many Oz specific like content creators and podcasts there are out there. I was like, oh, this is a whole world.
It's a whole world. Well,
I related to what you said, Quincy, because you never know. And we literally went to YouTube, like how to start a podcast. Because I was like, I don't know, will people listen? And you're exactly right. Like once people see that glimmering beacon, like, oh, they love it too. They feel safe to come to you and join. So kind of a parallel experience for us too.
No, it sounds like we've had like exact same trajectory.
I know. And it's so cool that our like trains are parking today, which is great.
Yes.
Can you rewind just a clock tick for us with why Wicked? Like why Wicked for you guys individually? And then the formation of this pod, how that came into fruition. We know the pandemic was a part of it. But just want to hear your journeys.
Kevin, you go first.
Okay. So... I mean, if we're starting all the way at the beginning, I owned a VHS copy of The Wizard of Oz that I bought with birthday money, and that was in 1997, and it's been downhill since then. It has not stopped. But yeah, and then it was like however many years later, then it was like, wait, there's a new musical that's like a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and then 20 years of that. And I think for me, at least, like why Wicked is it's the only show that I'm never tired of, because I would say less than five shows that you could, press play on the cast recording at any point, and I would be like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, let's listen to this. And it's the kind of production where like, I'm seeing something new every time I go. So I just think that it's like, in terms of picking a topic to start a podcast, it's there's so much to discuss, but it's all funneled back into this great source material.
Yeah,
that, you know, we have girls on the podcast all the time talking about riffing or not riffing, who say like, what's on the page is so good. Like Wicked itself is such a brilliant show. So that then to kind of break down people's interpretations of it is you could talk about it for hours and hours, and we have.
And we will.
I love that. Thank you, Kevin, for sharing that. That's awesome.
That was very well articulated. I'm not going to be as articulate as Kevin. Why Wicked? Well, I think I discovered Wicked. I took an eighth grade musical theater class. I grew up in Hawaii, mm-hmm. so I was like a little separated from the Broadway of it all. And this girl in my class, we did an exercise where you had to perform a song from a musical as a monologue, you know, like that.
Classic. Classic. We all just like,
popular. You're going to be popular.
I did Who Am I from Les Miserables. but a girl did Defying Gravity. Or like, in retrospect, I think she kind of missed the brief because like her monologue was this dark thing about animal abuse and politics and all this stuff, which Wicked is about, not necessarily what the song Defying Gravity is about, or it kind of is, but I don't, she's, it wasn't like a great translation of the song. It was more just like Wicked as a whole, the theme.
She's 14, so. Yeah.
But it came across very dark, and I remember sitting in that class being like, oh my God, what is this musical about? So then yes, I went and listened to Defying Gravity, bought it on iTunes, obsessed. I think it was the belting, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. And then downloaded the whole soundtrack and looked up a script for Wicked online and then sat and read the script and then like played the song when we got to that part.
Dramaturg.
And because I didn't know bootlegs existed yet. So that was like, I was like, okay, this is kind of all, this is how I'm going to do it. And then one day I was just on YouTube. I was big into YouTube, not bootleg YouTube, but just like YouTube culture, and then stumbled across the Defying Gravity bootleg and like remember to this day, like being shook because I never had even thought that like she would fly in listening to the song and then seeing that. And then that like introduced me to the whole world of bootlegs. And I was like very big into, I'm a very compulsive person. So like once I kind of got that scratch,
that's,
I kind of itch.
Common Oz person trait.
Is it?
100%.
So yeah, so then I was full on like trading bootlegs, collecting bootlegs in my community. I had like a blog where I had all my bootlegs listed. I was sending fan mail to Broadway. Like I was really in it. I think because I was separated from it and couldn't actually like see Broadway do any of that, I like just did everything I could to feel like I was, you know, a part of it in Hawaii.
That's more than like most people would do. So you're like, you were a part of it.
Yeah.
Wait, you contributed fan letters. You have just,
I have everyone's. It's like,
he has them all. It's so cute.
It's embarrassing now. Cause now when I like meet people, I'm like, if only you knew I was like 12 years old sending you letters and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, like every alphabet under the sun I've like written to and gone. I have in my home in Hawaii, I have in a box, like binders, and I would like present them very nicely. So there's like, binder, I would type up questionnaires and like send it to them to fill out and autograph.
Which, Quincy, this is like, you're still doing this. Like, this is some, this is your inner child.
Yeah, your job.
Like, you're still writing to alphabets and saying, can I ask you some questions?
Can I ask you questions?
It's so true.
Made it happen.
I had a friend from college who, like, when I went to school in Poughkeepsie, upstate. And my freshman year, I was coming down to the city every weekend and seeing shows. And I had a friend from college and we were talking and I told her that and she had never realized that I was doing that. And she was like, wow, you really have been on brand like your entire life.
It's all makes sense.
But yeah, it's kind of like what Kevin was saying. It's like the one show that I never get tired of. I think like my compulsive personality latched onto it and has not let it go. And I actually think there is something to me only experiencing the show through bootlegs for so long, it kind of gave me, it like ingrained that like, okay, no alphabet is going to do it the same. And you can see the differences in each different actress who's playing the role kind of a thing. So that by the time I finally saw it live for the first time, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, you're great. I can't wait to see who else does this. I want to see the next one. Mm-hmm. I kind of had that compare and contrasting mindset set forth me already.
Magical.
I love this so much. I mean, I think I feel this way with like Wizard of Oz for me, since Wicked was not out yet when I was a child. I had my teen moment with Wicked. But I definitely feel like I would rewatch Wizard of Oz over and over on TV. And then like I went to the Paper Mill Playhouse to see the 1992 production of Wizard of Oz, which like basically launched the whole MSG national tour. It was like, that was the production. And because my mom is like who she is. She's tour. Oh my god, amazing! It was basically yeah. It was.
Totally did you see Eartha Kitt?
No, Eartha. It wasn't Eartha.
I saw Eartha Kitt and Mickey Rooney. Can you believe?
That's magic. Oh nothing better. I like that's also it. Like such a cool thing to have Mickey Rooney be a part of that company.
Very
like,
cool.
All of his mm-hmm. history. But my mom is a pickle-little of my hometown in New Jersey. So she like has connections always. So she knew the girl playing Dorothy Kelly Rapke because she was friends with her grandma. So like I dressed up as Dorothy, went backstage, like the whole thing. But like it's like I have goosebumps thinking about it. So it's like that, whatever that is like preserved whenever I talk mm-hmm. about Oz. Like it just comes mm-hmm. back. So I always makes me think like, are we all just trying to get back to those magic moments we had as a kid? Is that all we're ever trying to
do? I mean, yeah, I think that's life. As I get older and older, I'm like, oh, I guess the rest of your adult life, you're just trying to service your inner child and heal all of
that. And then do your taxes. And then do your taxes and like do all the things that are like miserable.
And then back to the inner kid, yeah.
Uh-huh. I love that, Quincy, though. I didn't even, because I don't know how the whole bootleg world worked. And to know that you were like on the ground in the beginning mm-hmm. trading. That's so cool.
It was, and you know, so there was this one bootleg, they called them masters. And those were the ones who were like actually going in and recording and then distributing the bootlegs. And they would like have all these stipulations, like you can't trade it until this date if I give it to you kind of a thing.
Oh my gosh.
But there was one master named Sunset Boulevard 79. That was his username.
Usernames. I love usernames.
Call them out.
Well, you know, if they're out there, I hope, because where I'm going with this is, I would get like frequent updates from Sunset Boulevard 79 and then all of a sudden just stopped.
Oh, no.
And never heard from them again. And to this day, I'm like, what happened with Sunset Boulevard 79? And all it right, doesn't bother me.
That's a great reality TV show. Like,
I feel like now's a good time to tell you that I am
Sunset Boulevard 79. Can you imagine? Please.
It's me.
Whole circle.
But it is like a whole thing because like a bunch of people who I had digital pen pal relationships with and we would trade and be trading partners, we called them, are now just like New York City gays that I see out, you know? It's so funny.
I love that. I love that.
Also love like, I think they just came up on my YouTube. There was some like, I don't know who did this, so I'm going to be so speaking out of turn, but it was like, why Wicked is so gay. It was like a 2-hour documentary. And I was like,
very gay.
I was like, yes, I love this. How would you answer that?
I need
like,
to watch it.
Yeah, like Wicked being like what it represents for gay culture, queer culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting because I'm like, why, even when we launched our podcast, our listenership skewed heavy male. I think it's like evened out since, but I always thought mm-hmm. that was super
same
interesting.
Here. Really? We're like mostly gay men. Yes.
Yeah. Like it really resonates with gay men. And I think it actually, I'd love to hear your thoughts because I think it actually probably starts with The Wizard of Oz because I think there's a gay affinity for The Wizard of Oz. Period.
100%.
I mean, yes, I do think there are so many things. I think even from like before the movie, I think the Oz books spoke to kids who were queer like in the 1900s. Like I really,
for sure.
I think it's just been like since that far back mm-hmm. because there's really like no gender involvement in Oz and like girls like are in power and it's, mm-hmm. that's just right. what it is. And there's just, like no commentary and there's no like agenda with it either, which I really appreciate. It isn't right. like,
they're just stories.
Yeah. It's not like a bless. I was sharing off mic that I just saw Once Upon a One More Time, which I did have a lot of fun at. That's the Britney Spears musical that incorporates a lot of different fairy tales, mm-hmm. but they had an agenda. Like there was like a lot of like girl power statements that were being made. And sometimes I was like, okay, I feel like I'm at a Hillary Clinton rally. I like need this to like take a beat. But like Oz never does that. Like there's no like pounding over the head, but it is just, it's just like people of all body types, like people who are not even mm-hmm. like any, like, you know, like a Tin Man can have a friend who's a scarecrow. And there's like a trans princess in Oz. If you go into the books, like it's pretty cool. So mm-hmm. I think it just links back all the way to there.
And was, I'm going to show my ignorance, was Wizard of Oz Judy Garland's first big role?
Yeah, it launched.
So then it gave that generation a gay icon. Wicked gave us a gay icon.
Yes.
Well, and I think too, because, I mean, we could do a whole separate series on like the
we write a book?
The Wizard of Oz gay affinity. I think another reason that Wicked resonates so much with our community is that, like, queer people love The Wizard of Oz, and queer people, I feel like, are brainwashed into loving the villains of a story because the villains are always queer coded. And so I feel like watching Disney movies growing up, you're like, oh, Jafar is a drag queen. And like, oh, Scar is like a campy old man. Like these villains are always very queer coded. And so then I think probably a lot of queer people are attached to the Wicked Witch of the West in some way. So then when here's this new product that is centered on the villain, and not only that, now we're going to turn the good witch into an anti-heroine herself. So I don't know. I think the villainification and the villain centering really speaks to us.
The story plus about the someone who's ostracized and not accepted, plus the belting, like it all is there.
It's everything.
Plus the diva worship.
Yes, yes.
And the white pants.
And the white pants.
Yeah.
It's so true. Yes. I don't think I thought about the villain part, the villain element at all, about being that's really cool. Big part of queer culture. Now, before we go more into Wicked, just to touch in on like the other things in your Oz DNA, since we like love to like look at the core bricks, for the little MGM, but is anyone like a Jewel concert Lincoln Center fan starring Julia Murney in the ensemble? Did we see Wizard of Oz on Ice? Did we go see the great movie ride at Disney World? Is there any other things?
Wizard of Oz was my big break as a performer when I was a kid.
That's right. What role?
I was originally cast as NTM and Uncle
Henry.
The Uncle you Henry. Cast as both?
I was cast as Uncle Henry. I just couldn't remember who the Uncle Henry was.
Joint casting.
I was cast as Uncle Henry, cool. But then the guy who got cast as a lion had to drop, and then the director called me and was like, would you be comfortable playing the lion? And it was my big break. It was the first time I remember my mother telling me that she was proud of me after a show. It was like a huge moment.
I resonate
with the lion.
Oh my gosh. That's a core memory. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's
really nice. Come on, Lion. Understudy. Hope your pay went up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, I have been to the great movie ride. I actually got stuck in the Oz section.
Dreams.
And
there's weddings. It was really cool. There have been weddings. No. There have been weddings.
Oh, I'll send you the article.
Yeah. That's dangerous for me to know.
Weddings.
But Connor would never so let you. I did. No, he would never.
Tara was mad when I sent it to her. She's like, do not send this to me because it was happening. I was like, sorry.
There would be no convincing my partner either. Yeah. No,
it would not.
That's so wild.
I also was the scarecrow for Halloween in first grade.
I was a scarecrow for Halloween in first grade.
And I... Come on. But I have very vivid memories of, like, I was in just, like, a shake-and-go scarecrow costume.
Love shake-and-go.
But anytime somebody was like, oh, you're a scarecrow. I'm the scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz. It is a capital S scarecrow.
You're like, I'm Ray Bolger.
Thank you very much. I am Fiero Trapdoor Scene.
Yes. I share this all the time because it is like what's happening now. I teach children a lot, and I have incorporated Oz into some of my like reading lessons I do. And I have a student who she will not let the Wicked lore go with Wizard of Oz because Wicked is what she knows first. It's first.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh. It's first for her. So she's like, why is Fiero doing this? Like anytime we talk about the scarecrow, I'm like, oh God.
Fiero.
Like,
Fiero.
Yes. That's why is Fiero funny. Doing this?
Wow. The kids are all right.
They're going to be fine.
They're going to be fine. Yeah. She's hilarious. So cute. She couldn't let go of the fact that like the witch in the book is not as in it as much as like Elphaba is like, clearly the vehicle of this.
Yeah. Oh, very different.
She's the main character. Come on.
Yeah. It's amazing. One chapter in the book. It's
why is there so much Dorothy?
Yeah, she's like,
we don't need this, girl.
Who?
I love this. That's Kevin funny. And Quincy, how did you two meet? And how did that lead you yes. to decide, like, what was that moment when you were like, wait, you love Wicked? Wait, I love Wicked? And then how did that lead you to actually pick up the mic and turn it into a podcast?
Yeah.
The year was 2017. Picture it.
2016 is a dark year.
2018. A young, college-aged Quincy walked into the offices of Roundabout Theater Company to interview for a marketing internship and was interviewed by none other than Kevin Bianchi.
Here we go. Then,
So we're interviewing. It is we're in the conference room at Roundabout, which has production photos from their productions. So we're literally sitting under a huge picture of Stephanie J. Block.
The one and only
as Edwin Drood. So she's there in all of her glory. And then my final question in the interview was always like just what's your favorite show? Just kind of like a icebreaker at the end kind of thing. And so I asked Quincy, and now you tell the rest of the story.
And I say Wicked, and he was like, oh my God, who's your favorite Elphaba? And so I'm like, I need to impress this man who's like gonna hire me. I'm this a young kid. So I was like, my pick needs to show that I am like intelligent, that I'm cultured, that I know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not gonna say like Idina Menzel or something, you know? And so I like think, and I was like, because that's the basic answer, not because of any other reason.
My happy place right now.
Like, that's the basic knowledge.
So I say Willemijn Verkijk, because I'm like, that shows that I'm cultured. She's done it in three languages. Like, that she's a worldly one. It's a
sophisticated answer.
Yeah, and she's a slave.
Answer.
And he takes it, and I go, what about you? And he goes, oh, well, Stephanie J. Block references the photo on the wall. I freak out. Because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about Stephanie J. Block. Never mind, Stephanie J. Block is my favorite album, but like, I'm so sorry. Like, I freaked out because I personally felt bad that I forgot about Stephanie J. Block in my list of considerations that I was going to give this interviewer for an internship. And then I booked it. And then we spent a summer together. I actually think we bonded over Ariana Grande before we bonded.
That's wild.
Yeah, which it all comes back though. Like,
that's wild.
Because we also had a very active shtick about fighting over Smash, which had been off the air for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And that, so like the Hilty of it all, the Ariana of it all.
Yeah, we've had shticks from the beginning. We're good at bantering. Yeah,
it's because we argue about everything.
I love it though. I love that you have different tastes in all of this. Yeah. It's amazing.
So then we bonded over the summer, and then I went back for my senior year of college after that, and we like stayed friends, came down and saw the Cher show with him, and then after graduating,
Stephanie J. Block.
Yeah. We built a friendship, and then over the pandemic, I was back home in Hawaii, and Kevin was still in the city, and kind of like you guys, we were just texting each other dumb, wicked things every day. And then one day I jokingly was like, we should start a podcast where we interview Alpha Buzz, because Kevin will tell you.
What was the original title?
I'm a talker, I'm not a doer. So I'll like put ideas out there. But then Kevin picked it up and then like didn't drop it. And then it turned into
a
thing.
Yes, Kevin. I got it. Sending you platform.
Come on, Kevin.
Sending you mics to buy tutorial. From Amazon.
Was there an original title before Sentimental Men?
We had a brainstorm. Right? I can probably find it. One of our original ideas was She Is That Girl instead of She's Not That Girl.
Oh, She Is That Girl.
That Girl. I remember I was pushing for That Girl.
Or That Girl. Yeah, like That Girl.
That Girl.
Ooh. We had something about like a frank analysis of the musical Wicked was in there.
Cute. That felt a little too heady for me. But that was like the colon for one of our...
For one of them. Yeah, well, there was a couple ideas. But when we came up with Sentimental Men, I remember both of us were like, no, that's it. Because that's like cheeky and it's like a sort of like indirect reference. But it also is like kind of coded for like these two gay boys talking about Wicked.
You know.
Is he sentimental?
It's like the Friends Jersey code language. Yes.
It is, yeah.
How magical that it could start from like kind of an offhanded sort of joke. Like, could this happen from your rooms from miles away? And now look where you are.
Yeah.
Which I guess is how things are supposed to happen. If you really have to strong arm something, it's probably not meant to be.
It's true. You're right. Like, it kind of all blurs together now, like our creation of this podcast, because it just felt like brick after brick just kept happening. Yeah, like we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
No, us either.
We all are.
Still don't.
still learning.
This past Pride season, we were able to gift one of our Patreons a truly unique Aussiean gift.
Yes, we were. Thanks to I'm the Story, our lucky Patreon received an LGBTQIA+ rainbow-themed personalized hard copy of The Wizard of Oz, featuring our winner's name on the cover and throughout the story. What? These personalized classic books are the perfect present for a storybook-themed party and, of course, the lover of old lit in your life.
Many past customers of I'm the Story have used these personalized copies as sign-in books for events like birthday parties or baby showers, becoming memorable keepsakes of unique events.
When creating your own personalized classic book, you can add additional friends and family members' names in place of your favorite characters. You can also add a thoughtful inscription to make your loved one feel extra special. So yes, you can become Dorothy in Oz, and your pet can easily become Toto too.
All copies are high quality and made in hardcover. Check I'm the Story's rave reviews on their Etsy shop linked in our show notes. They showcase a sweet reputation, leaving excellent first impressions.
Our friends at I'm the Story strive to provide great quality products and dedicated customer service. We've experienced this firsthand ourselves.
So visit I'm the Story today for that bookish gift with a personal touch. They don't just make books, they make memories. Link in show notes.
When was the moment where it was like, oh, wow, this is actually resonating with people? There are people listening. Did people reach out to you? Were they DMing you?
What's your socials crazy are great, like, too. Your socials are so good.
Oh, thank you.
You're on it. You're on fire.
For sure.
I feel like pretty early on, like even when we didn't have a lot of followers or anything, the engagement was always so strong. Like we would get tons of comments and stuff for like that were disproportionate for the amount of likes we were getting, for the amount of followers we were getting. Like it was just – it felt like – and I think because in the beginning, especially, all of the content and stuff was coming from such a like genuine, we're just like sharing our like crazy weird thoughts with you. So I think anyone who resonated with that remotely was going to be touched and engaged by it. But yeah, pretty early on from like just starting posting on social and episode with Lindsay Pierce, it felt like things were going. And also Lindsay Pierce was so great at like being our cheerleader from the get-go, which I think was very helpful.
Did you know her beforehand or just reached out?
I had worked with her on like one previous project at my last job. And then we kind of just developed a good shtick together. And then we asked her to be the first guest.
Love a shtick.
I love
her episodes are great.
Yeah. She's like the most,
she is so like,
she's been
well
on the
thought.
Yeah.
I've worked with her.
She's an icon. Yeah.
It's just like you sit her down in front of a microphone and you can talk to her for like a day.
I know. Where's her podcast?
I feel like she has so many interests too. Like she's so well read. She's into
really
like
she's stuff. Actually.
She's really
she
cool.
She should start a book podcast or something.
I could see that.
We should pitch that to her.
Let her know. Lindsay, she was once the Lori to my 80 Annie in a junior college production of Oklahoma back in Modesto, California in like 2009. What? Yeah. Yeah, we grew up like, I'll send you photos. The video.
Why are you sitting on that, Emily?
And we did Glee Project too.
We did Glee Project.
My goodness. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. I will say it here. I don't know if I've ever said this. We had like this huge, the first round of Glee Project, and you have no idea who's there. And the first day I'm coming down the elevator and I turn the corner and I see Lindsay. And I was so excited. And then I immediately was like, she's gonna get it. Like this is
awesome. Emily, were you on the Glee Project?
I got cut in the like top 89. It was like
wow.
There's like a 1 second clip.
You're in it though.
You know.
I would have passed out at the audition. Like, there's no way I would ever be in a top anything.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story. But anyway,
wear that like a badge of honor.
Big fan. Yeah. Here it is. Top 89, baby.
Top 89, baby.
The Glee Project has given the world so much.
It has.
Truly.
So now multiple Tony Award winners. Yeah.
Literally. Literally.
And down the Yellow Brick Pod co-host.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. So now, like, on your pod, you have, like, all these, like, amazing, like, hypotheses that have developed over time, like, about, like, Elphaba's having a certain song that is their trademark song, which is incredible. Yeah. And Glinda's, too, having a signature song. And what are you finding to be, like, where are there lots of, like, if you had to make pie charts, where are you finding, like, the pie to be the biggest slice with certain hypotheses you have created? And if you can also explain a little bit about these hypotheses, it's a hard word to say.
Yeah.
For our listeners who are going to be new to you and then fall in love with you and then abandon us and go to your pod.
What's so funny is, like, I don't even know where the question came from, but it definitely started. Oh, do you?
Yeah. I do. Well, no, because there was, I don't remember what the original meme was, but there was a meme.
Venn diagram.
It was like a three circle Venn diagram. And it was like, I don't remember what it was about, but I sent it to you or you sent it to me. And it was like, we should make these for the Elphabas and Glindas. Yeah. And that's where the question came from.
Was it like Waitress Wicked Frozen and the actresses?
Yes, yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. And then from that, we were like, oh, we should do this for Elphabas. So it started out, it never, I think it is transformed into this like very heady, like acting question, but it started out pretty surface level and kind of was just
silly.
Like,
yeah,
dancing through life level. Okay.
But what I think is cool is like it has turned into this like deeper meaning thing that we use as like a tool more to get the actress to open up about their take on the role and how they perceive Elphaba and blah 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 blah.
But what's crazy is like, who was it? Lissa de Guzman was on, and we asked her, are you a wizard? And I, Defying Gravity or No Good Deed Elphaba. And she was like, well, on my first day of rehearsal, we like finished and the music director turned to me and was like, you're definitely a No Good Deed Elphaba. And to hear that and be like, okay, so now we're like vernacular. Like that has become like a thing.
Do you think we started that? Because I get in my head where I'm like, surely, okay, maybe we just aren't the only people to have like used that before.
I don't know. Well, I'm going to give us, not maybe not all the credit, but I'm going to give us our own flowers and say, even if we didn't make it up, we certainly elevated it.
All right.
Yes. I really think that you're going to get more and more, especially now knowing like my little student who's like the Scarecrow's Fiero, you know, you're going to get more and more like the future generations of Elphabas and Glindas, like relying on your podcast to teach them how to go into this process. It's true though. Like, especially when you don't know anyone yet or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, and it was cool. Lucy Jones, when we talked to her, she was like, guys, going into the show, I was listening to the episodes and just like studying up and taking notes, which I was like, oh my God. Crazy.
People have quoted our podcast in their like term papers. Like it's so many like, which is so like nerdy and cool to me. Like, it's really cool to hear stuff like that of like, more than just like, hey, I listened to your podcast. Like to hear people who've taken it a step further is really cool.
Yeah. But like overarching themes that we've noticed, I think across the board, most Elphabas don't like The Wizard and I, and they.
That shakes me. That's my favorite.
It's my favorite. Yeah, it's I think I would.
I actually just sang it today with my voice teacher. I do like Elphaba for stamina work just for fun.
Yeah, nice.
And
nothing better.
It's truly. And I hadn't sang it in a minute. We're doing a show coming up, Em and I, and we're going to do some wicked stuff. So I was like, maybe I'll do Wizard and I. And then at the end, it's like that girl in the Chorus Line documentary after she like does the at the ballet.
For the ballet.
And it's just like, that was hard. Like she has like that.
That's
like,
not easy.
That's it. I literally like I almost that. Passed out at the
what
end.
What is her name? This is a name we all should know and like magical. Have top of mind.
Was she Maggie
she book.
In the? Oh, she didn't book.
Oh, she didn't book. Oh, she didn't book.
She did not.
Not Mara Davi.
Mara Davi.
It was not Mara Davi. But it was Mara
Davi nails it. And then he says, "Good girl, Mara."
Good girl.
I fucking love that movie.
Oh my God! It was my college. Oh, it's, and I it's worked everything. With Jessica Lee Golden while I was in college. She was my roommate. She was choreographing a summer stock show I was in. And I was like sweating buckets because I was like, she is the famous girl from this documentary.
She's
I'm a
famous girl. She's, the she's the one.
But yeah, I just sang it through. I was like, oh my God, this is really a tricky, it is a tricky sing in just the fact that it like is conversational, but it's all over your voice. And there's also those like, I'm not that girl low notes in it. I forget they come up. And that's yes, it's low. Yeah. So I was like, oh yeah, I guess this is tricky. And I guess like if you are having a bad day, there's no warming in to Elphaba.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. That's a theme. Also, Kevin can probably speak to this better, but I feel like we've noticed there's a personality type of actress that typically ends up booking Elphaba where like I feel like there's been an air of like they go in and they were like not really prepared. They didn't really, they kind of just were like, listen, this is going to be what it is. And like, I'm not going to care about it. And then they always book. And they're always like, go ahead, Kevin.
I agree. I think like a really, something we hear a lot, and this is like a universal like karma principle, is just like everyone we hear, they're like, I let it go and then I booked it. Like, I thought I didn't do a good job and then I got the call, or like, you know, I messed up in the room and then I got the call. Like it's just so interesting. Or like Jackie Burns like didn't want to be in the show, but she went because her agent got her the appointment. Mm-hmm. And then she got the call and she was like, I don't want to do this show. And he was like, do this fucking part. but it's just and it's so funny. And I think that speaks to Elphaba needs to have just that there's just like it's the charisma, like it's just like a thing you can't teach and a thing you can't portray. She's got to have that like whatever attitude, the same way that you never see somebody cast as Glinda who's like, yeah, it's really nice to be in the show, I'm really having a great time. Like it's, there's just like an innateness that I think comes across when the actress is like not putting the pressure on herself over it.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, I think, is it's like you, I'm sure there are enough people who come in and audition for Elphaba and let the fact that it's been their dream since they were a little kid overpower their performance. And so I think seeing somebody just come in and like say the words, sing the songs, like it's low stakes for them, is probably so refreshing in a sea of Rachel Berry's. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
A sea of Rachel Berry's.
Which is a sea I'd love to swim in.
I'd love to be there.
I think I'd go the other way. I would be having a little
scared. But that's what they loved about Idina. I mean, in the Grimmery, they're like, she was a hot mess and Kristen was like on her game.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, didn't Idina, she like messed up and she like swore in the middle of her audition.
Said the F word. Like, whoops. Yeah.
And she's sight. We were reading more with Stephen Schwartz's book. Like, she's sight read. I'm not that girl.
She's sight read.
Yeah.
I'm not that girl.
They threw it at her.
Paints a new layer of Idina for me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay.
And her callback, I think. But also, we just found this out. I'm sure you guys know this. I had no idea. I was like, what? Joe Mantello originally wanted to bring in Audra. That was like his number one choice.
Interesting.
And she either in Stephen Schwartz's biography, it says Stephen wanted to hear her sing, like wouldn't just hand it to her. I think Joe would have just handed it to her, but was like, no, we have to have her come in. She either was offer only for what, this was like the first reading in New York, or she was out of town and just not available. But like, they never saw her. They never saw her. And I didn't know, like, Stephen Schwartz was, like, really pushing for Anna Gesteyer. I was like, oh.
Sure.
I didn't know that either. I want to know all the women who were in that first, like, round. Because, like, I know that there are women who probably should have played it at some point, but maybe it just did pass them by. Like, that's awesome. Yeah.
Well, there's, like, the allure, which I think we've talked about on the podcast before. But before we started the podcast, and the story is not going to be accurate. I'm just saying that on record.
It's lore.
There's some accuracy to it.
Lore.
Before we started the podcast, I was at Broadway Con and working an event, and then I popped into Julia Murney was doing a Wild Party panel, And after the panel was done, she came out and I waited for her to like greet people and take pictures and stuff. And then I walk up to her and I go, Julia Murney, I need you to lay out, because I knew that she, I was like, I think I've heard that you were the first person to sing Defying Gravity in New York City. Sing Defying Gravity, period. And she was like, she jumped into it immediately. She was like, no, that's not true. I was the first person to sing Defying Gravity in New York City. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, it had been done in California and stuff, but I was the first person to sing it at the Duplex in New York City. And I
another gay tie to this musical.
Yeah. Well, the Duplex. I go, okay, cool. So you also went in to audition for Elphaba Broadway, correct? And she was like, correct. And I was like, who else was in that room with you?
There. I need a spreadsheet.
And she said, Adina, she said, Anna, she said a couple of other names that I'm not going to remember. She told me Alice Ripley.
Oh, but then,
after we started the podcast and I spoke on mic, I was like, we should probably fact check this because I think back then we were a little more concerned about speaking accurately.
Yeah.
We DM'd Alice Ripley and we were like, hi, we heard this. This is journalism. Is this
journalism?
If I'm remembering correctly, she was like, you know, I don't really remember, but I think I went in for Glinda, not for Elphaba.
Yeah.
Interesting.
She was
which
in.
Then is, that is so world opening to me.
World. Yep. Uh-huh. I'm here for it.
Like, that's crazy.
I feel like that, I feel like that Glinda would have taken a lot of pauses.
I'm still stuck on Audra, though.
I'm so stuck on Audra. I can't not.
Because it's like
Alice Ripley, Glinda, and an Audra McDonald Elphaba.
That's a whole other world we're living in. That's Shirley Temple. That's Shirley Temple. That's Usher as Dorothy. That's what we're living in.
But that's what I'm saying is like, think about like.
The score flopped.
The score. But think about like. There's such a conversation about Black women playing Elphaba and how that doesn't happen. And so it's so wild that like, that was almost the prototype and it's been 20 years and a Black woman has never done it full time on Broadway. So, and
would
that's just like crazy
to me.
Would
we still be here today if Audra opened it?
Well, and would we have hundreds of mini Idina Menzels running around? Like, Wicked changed the way women learned to sing.
Yeah, would girlies be belting? Would Mean Girls have existed?
No. Broadway would be a healthier place.
Everyone would be less tired.
When Em and I go on road trips, I'm like, I'm putting on Idina Menzel's debut album. She's like, okay.
It's like, she loves it. It's like 1995 or something.
But like, I'm like, whoa, I'm hitting really high notes. And I don't know how. It's because when I was younger, I just would like scream with the CD. Like, I just screamed along with Idina. Because Idina is definitely, I don't think I have any of her really in my sound, but I listened to her so much that I like just like learned screaming, I guess. Well, she's a healthy singer, but I was not, I don't think, emulating it healthily.
Right. I think trying to emulate that sound with no technique or training is a recipe for disaster.
Hey everyone, so MK and I are indebted to the many magical brands and small business owners we collaborate with to celebrate all things Oz. From helping us out at everything from red carpet events to Broadway Con to spoiling our listeners rotten in giveaways, we couldn't do it without these generous folks, which now include Finley and MK Williamson, the fabulous father-daughter duo that run Thespian Swag on Etsy.
Thespian Swag offers everything from t-shirts to mugs, enamel pins, and more. A favorite product are their puncils, 12 colored pencils with different themes, like the Wicked set with colors This Year's Pink, Dancing Blue Life, and Fiello.
Whether you need t-shirts for your theater camp that say things like strong female lead or the perfect onesie for a theater nerd's new baby, this shop can help you wear your thespian pride on your sleeve, literally.
So visit Thespian Swag, linked in show notes below. Back to school shopping for Shiz University, fully supported.
Still, I can't be still.
Still, I can't be still. But Larissa's Lagoon, though, literally the best bop I've ever heard. That is one of my favorite songs. Like, no, Idina, like, she literally changed musical theater. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Just changed it. We were saying, like, when we did her episode, me too. Like, we didn't even know how to handle her episode. We're like, the only word that makes sense is iconic. And I hate that we're saying iconic like every 5 seconds, but I really don't know how else to describe her.
It's super singular to me. It's like she very, she is in her own lane that no one else has really been able to replicate since.
Yeah.
And I think Kristen, too, I think that's part of what made the show Lightning in a Bottle when it opened was like, you have Idina Menzel, who's inimitable. Like, she does what she does so well. And then you have Kristen Chenoweth, who is so versatile and so good at yodeling and singing, you know, operatic soprano and you know, her belt and her chest register. Like, she has such a specific comedic timing that then it's like you build these two roles around these two unfillable shoes. Mm-hmm. Or these, you know what I mean? And so then it's like the bar is just set so high by the two women who originated these roles.
Yeah. We had like a big conversation about this.
People rise to it. I don't mean to imply that.
No, I know. Yeah, that's what's so nuts. Like this, the bar was so high. And we just had a guest on, our guest who was a Glinda who thought she was going to be an Elf of a, like, whole journey with Wicked on the bar being so high. And also, like, the evolution of these roles, like, how they've morphed over time. And I actually, I still can't get over my own reaction. Going back to watching Kristen Chenoweth in Popular, I was like, she doesn't do anything that these girlies do now. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so simple. Mm-hmm. And, like, I cried in the moment where she had the whole milk flower moment, and that doesn't make it true. Because it was honest and not a boop joke, which still works. It still totally works. We had a guest say that, like, if Glinda drank a lot at the Ozdust, this all makes sense. Yeah. Like, which I was like, yes.
I always say that.
Yeah.
Because I think, like,
justified.
Yeah, it's like, there's definitely a scale of, like, how over the top the Glindas go. And I think that it's like that fine line is like, are you acting childish or are you acting like a girly who just like maybe had one too many elixirs at the party? And it's like, and that's the line between comedy and chaos.
Yes. I feel like it's a very wobbly line. I think I do think the Glindas personally have a harder job in terms of likability for the audience, I think.
Definitely.
And like just the shoes being harder so to fill. I think the shoes are harder to sing for Elphaba. But the shoes are harder to, like, I don't know, be loved, because she's not the best person. She does a lot of stuff that you have to be like, oh my gosh, like dancing through life is hard to like sit through with what she does.
And that's why I think it's so smart too that they start the show with her, and she gives the audience a chance to say, like, yes, it is good to see you. Because then 5 minutes later, when she's flat out bullying this green girl, it's like, oh, like, at least you have that inherently already in you. Like, okay, like, she's going to end up fine. Like, she's going to end up as the good witch. So I think it's like, it gets us on her side little bit in No One Mourns. And then as soon as Elphaba runs through those doors, then it's like, oh, this is our leading lady. This is who we're rooting for. And then we kind of learn to love Glinda over again.
I guess that's why the I'm Not That Girl reprise is important. Because I feel like
it hits.
The only time where I'm like, okay, Glinda, I feel sorry for you.
I got you. I think I'm switching more to liking Glinda more as like we journey with it. Because I don't think I ever paid too much attention to her. I always have been an Elphaba girl, I feel like. But now I'm like, oh, there is so much here. And like, I do think as more people are more Glindas than Elphabas in the world. Like,
I agree.
You know what, and you know when you're born.
I think if you ask people like, oh, are you an Elphaba and a Glinda? Everyone wants to say Elphaba very like aspirationally, I feel like. But I think like, at our core, I think we are all more like Glinda than we maybe want to admit. Like, I don't think any of us, I don't mean like the four of us, but I think like the percentage of people in the world who would like lead a charge against the government are few and small. Like, yes, there are more people who are going to say, I hope you're happy, than there are people who are going to say, like, ah.
Oh, my gosh.
Correct.
Perfect. Perfect. Well said. But you're right. I think a lot of people, yeah, wish that they could, in that moment, if needed, step up to the plate. Mm-hmm.
That was a great way to put it.
What. Yeah.
Which then I think is like, that's what also like what helps us, the audience, not fall totally into disliking Glinda, because even on a subconscious level, I think people are seeing themselves as like, oh, I have learned to like someone I didn't like, or I have, you know, I would not step up and make a commotion. Like, I would be the one trying to quiet everything down. And then simultaneously with that, watching and saying like, oh God, like I wish I could be a rebel rouser, or I wish that I could not care what people are thinking about me. And that's like, oh, it's just, like, that's another thing. Like, why this show is, it's like, what, there are not many shows that have two such like fleshed out characters that can speak to people simultaneously and equally in that way. It's such a doubleheader.
We did the groomery quiz. Both of us felt like right in the middle, which I was like, that right literally sums us up. Because I also feel like, I feel like when we started our podcasting journey, I was more the Elphaba of our relationship, and you were more the Glinda. And I think we flopped now. I'm like, really? I don't want to go that deep. and she's more like, no, we have to, like, there's more of the switch that's happened there. Just like, oh, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another journey, random fun cue for you guys. Okay. Mm. Now that Wicked is almost 20, mm-hmm. is there like an Elphaba? It's like age didn't matter. No age. Like, it doesn't matter what year. Is there an Elphaba and Glinda pairing you wish could have existed together?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to see Mamie Paris and Patty Murin together.
Ooh.
I thought they would have made a really, really nice pair on Broadway. Like, there was a couple of years where I was like, this needs to happen now, and it never did.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
That was a big one for me.
That's a good one.
I also really want Casey Levy to come back and do it. I think she'd really slay it now. Mm. She slayed it before. Mm. She would slay it again.
I like when they come back after like a couple years.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, especially like the ones who are moms who go through like... Mm-hmm. Like a personal journey, the like level of like shit's given feel to be gone, and that's like a really unhinged Elphaba in the best way.
Yeah,
which I love.
Mm-hmm. I know you have a couple, Kevin. I feel like
Sorry, I didn't know if you were
really
done.
Kevin,
sorry.
Give it to us, Kevin.
The first one that just came to mind is I was like, I want to pick a comedy Glinda, because I feel like it hits different. Like, the scenes are funny, but when it's a funny person, it just hits different. So I'm going to start with Ali Mazi as my Glinda of choice, because she's funny. She
sing it.
She sounds great on all of it. She sounds gorgeous in the soprano part of her voice. Mm-hmm. And so then, like, keeping with that theme and given their personal relationship, I'm going to say Nicole Parker as Elphaba, because I would just
that
like
exists,
to see them together. But I would like to see it. Like, I would like to me see it. But if I had to pick, if I had to pick a different pairing, then I would either say Ali Mazi with... Actually, I would say Ali Mazi with Stephanie J. Uh-huh. I think that would gel.
Ooh, that'd be good. Sure. That'd be good.
Or I would say Nicole Parker with Katie Rose Clark.
It would be great.
That'd
be
because really great. That's, they, I think, have such different like personal energies in those roles mm-hmm. that I think the contrast would be loverly.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess that wasn't fair of me to pick an actual pairing. I was just thinking like Time Machine.
Yeah, like go back and see. Yeah, bend the rules. I love that. Well, I'm curious, fun little quick question, because I'm always curious what people think. If you because as you mentioned, some of the Elphabas you talk to, they're like, I don't really want to change much of the vocal stylings or add too many riffing moments. But what is your favorite or like can't live without it Elphaba riff moment of the show that you want to see that happen? And maybe one where you're like, I don't want.
Yeah, you never want it. Like a
Scorfaba
and a Riffaba moment.
Scorfaba. I kind of feel, I used to be super big into riffing. I feel like as I've gotten older, I don't care either way as much.
That's amazing.
One place in the show where I like do feel like you probably should do something is the Big Fiero in No Good Deed. It just feels like that moment is begging for something a little bit more. And then whenever it doesn't happen, in my head, there is a little bit of a womp womp. So that's like the one area where I would like really, I really do appreciate it if they do something fun. Ooh, one that I love that doesn't get done a lot is there's an opt up on the second Bring Me Down. That I really, really love. Dee Rossioli does it on, did it on tour. But yeah, that one I really love.
Tell them how I am defying gravity. I love that. And I love it because so many people say that they choose that because it's vocally easier for them, which is great because then whenever somebody does it, it always soars. And I just think it's like so exciting. And I love that it it just like changes the emphasis of the sentence. I think that's a really great choice. My favorite riff ever is absolutely an unapproved riff, but at her last show, Alice Fearn, I can't even sing it for you, but she does.
Please try.
She does that riff where she's like, it's in The Wizard and I, and she's like, the wizard. It's like, but she does it so fast. And then she's like, and I. It's
Can I
so
say, though?
Stupid.
Adina did that riff on Broad. There's audio of Adina doing
that. She did a similar riff.
Sure. But I'm not saying it to negate Alice. Yeah. I'm saying it to how crazy that Adina was doing that.
That is wild.
Sure. And then one thing I never want, and this is spicy, is I hate the opt up at the end of I'm Not That Girl. It bothers me so much.
We had a whole conversation.
Okay, and I understand if it's a necessity, but it takes me out of it. It feels less finite to me.
Got it.
I think I was shook. We saw it recently and it definitely was opted up and we were like, oh, I think I just went, oh, okay.
Yeah. Different.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make me cringe or anything, but it does. It takes me out of the song.
Got it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that yet. Like we just got out of our I'm Not That Girl breakdown and I actually really love that song more and more. We were saying it's like a Dear Diary. Like it's such an excellent like journal entry out loud song. But yeah, I do love that like it was our guest Kyle Brenzel. He said she's vocally getting as far away from Glinda who is that girl as possible and I was like chills up my body.
That's interesting.
And going like, higher feels like more hopeful, you know, which I don't think is the ending of that song. But,
oh, that's true. But if you take it up, there's like hope.
Right.
It should be dead.
I was thinking recently, do Glinda's get to opt up at the end if they can't do it? Or
I've never heard someone do
it.
Which that's another thing too, is I love the symmetry of them each being downstage left, hitting that basement note.
That's a lot
in
to
this
ask.
Moment of loss.
Same exact note.
I didn't even realize Glinda had
that's so low for someone who's literally singing like high, that's whatever hard. They are.
I assumed it's the same note. I don't know.
It probably is.
Glinda has it easier though because she just has to touch it because it goes right into as long as you're mine. So she can just go, I'm not that girl. Bum, 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 bum.
True. It can mask anything.
She can kind of, yeah. She can just kind of speak it.
I love that.
Last little silly question before we go into wrapping on up. Who do you think the first Elphaba or Glinda to Madame Warble will be?
Talia Seskauer wants to do it.
Stop it. She's got some time.
She's still a cherub.
She's got some time.
She's still a cherub.
So it would have to be a golden age Elfie. I mean, I would really kill to see Julia Murney's Madame Horrible one day.
That's it. Yeah. You nailed it. It's Julia Murney.
Her
it's
Wicked Witch speech would be terrifying.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think realistically, probably Anna Gasteyer feels likely to do it. Like,
she's not doing that.
I don't know. I feel it feels Vision almost like a prophecy to me. I feel like it's in the cards. I would love to see. For a long time, I was really hoping that Kristen Chenoweth was going to be Marable in the movie. Like, I was convinced that she was going to be. You couldn't tell me otherwise.
We wanted one of them to be. But I think, I don't, I mean, we think they're in it, right? We think they're in it.
Probably.
Yes. Yeah, they're in it.
There's gotta, they have to.
Listen, they both
I think it's like a cameo, though. I don't think it's like a role.
Right.
No.
They just walk on by. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm okay with
that's
that.
That's all I
I'm
need.
I'm okay with
yeah.
the movie existing separately.
Totally. What are you anticipating the most from the film? Like, what is the thing that you're ready to see finally get the, like, 360 experience?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in general, and I think this speaks mountains because I'm not a Glinda girl, I am just very excited to see Ariana's performance of, like, the entire thing. Mm-hmm. I think... Mm-hmm. With Cynthia, there is a level of like, we know Cynthia as a musical theater performer, so we don't know exactly what we're getting, but we have a good sense of like where that is
where
going
her
to
foundation
live.
Is.
Yeah. With Ariana, I feel like it is really like no one knows, and like it's going to be so thrilling to see what she does with it. So I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for Jonathan Bailey. I want to see if there's the white pants. I hope they don't cut the white pants in Dancing Through Life. I'll be so upset. Yep. And then just like, did you guys see, can we talk about that? Did you guys see the like leaked video of that like 2 minutes?
Yeah, I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that video.
What was your question, Kevin?
Well, my question for you guys was, I was really pleasantly surprised to see that they were mirroring the MGM sets for this film. I'm curious how you guys feel about that, marrying the two properties together.
I'm totally here for that. I love that. I know in our research of Winnie Holtzman, our book writer, she talks about that of like when we mm-hmm. were creating the musical, we were really thinking of it as the MGM film. If the camera like tilted a little bit to
tilted,
the right
yeah.
here, you would see. And so I'm like, yes, tie that together. I'm here.
I think it's really cool. Yeah.
They paid for movie slippers, yeah. I think. Like, I think wow. that is a thing.
That's a
they
big
paid for licensing. I think I wow. might be speaking out of turn. But I think
it's
that
lore.
They did.
I love that
the lore. Lore. The lore.
I think they it's as opposed to what they did not do in San Francisco with their lawyers, which was like get away from anything that had any connection to MGM.
Yeah.
But like, I think this is leaning more in, and like we know Wicked's recouped for a moment, so I think they're okay now to go down that path.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Kevin, your movie thing. What are you excited about for the movie, Kevin?
Oh, well, the sets. I'm really excited to see the big stage crafty moments done in like movie magic, like the flying. I'm so excited to see, or the bubble. I'm so excited to see, like the elements of magic that depend on stage tricks. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how those translate.
Especially because that like that leaked video, we saw the tap to bubble button and she like presses it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that to me indicates that something very fun and creative is happening with this bubble. So I'm very curious to see
that
what happens.
Well,
yeah. And it was like, and the fact that it's not like a physical
which
bubble,
like I hope it's not. I don't want to see.
It looks like there's an element of like mechanics to it, which is such a nice nod to the stage design. Yeah, I think it's.
We don't need an Oz like an the Great and Powerful. Yeah, but bubble.
No.
None of that.
Oh no! Everything about that movie. No, I think they learned. I think We learned our lesson. I think Oz the Great and Powerful need it to happen for Wicked to now.
For Wicked to run.
Yeah, to Wicked to fly. Yeah, for Wicked to
run. Yes, Wicked to fly. Well, leading us into our last few questions for y'all. What are your dreams for Wicked's future? What do you hope to see in future casting? What future
and for you guys too.
Our dreams?
You're like a part of this. Like, you are Wicked. So,
yep.
I hope Wicked runs forever. I don't think I could personally handle a day where I see a Wicked closing announcement. That would really disrupt my life in a significant way.
Yeah, that's going to be.
I think for the future of the show, I would obviously love to see more diverse casting happening. I think what's happening on the West End is very fun and exciting, and I would love to see that trio live. Mm-hmm. I think what is an interesting thing to like that Wicked should try and figure out is the like replica versus non-replica licensing of it all. Even is there a world where you update the current production that's running on Broadway? I don't think this is like a Broadway thing in general. I don't think that like freezing a show and then letting it run for a million bajillion years makes the most sense. I think like you should totally be able to go in, and shows do it, but they never do it, I think, to the scale that like it could be done. So are there ways to update, keeping the bones and keeping the original production and everything, but just making like, as technology gets better, is there, could the flying look a little more realistic or whatever? You know, it does look realistic. Theater magic, I love it so much, but you know.
I've been thinking about that with the movie coming out, is it's like now, like, think about the Chicago movie. It's a little, it's like in the other order, but it's like people come to New York expecting to see Rob Marshall's Chicago. And if the original production of Chicago was what was running, that's not what they would get. So what I'm curious to see is, as the movie becomes the default image in people's mind, if the show, like Quincy's saying, will make any updates that reflect that. Like, at that point, are the Glindas going to start having longer wigs to look like how Ariana's hair, or are that, you know, are we going to
see
more black?
I do think Cynthia, Cynthia being cast, I think, is going to make it so easy to cast black Elphabas on Broadway, which is good.
Yeah.
It's insane that there hasn't been a full-time black woman as Elphaba on Broadway. That's insane. Wow. Amazing. And you guys, like, I mean, you weren't with Theaterly when you started. Can you quickly share how that happened? Because that's so cool that you have Theaterly, and like, you are like the MCs of this world now. Like, it really is super cool. Like, what's like the dream for you? Like, the Wicked
and
premiere?
Come on, Joel Grey reference.
There we go.
The sentimental men are the MCs.
Oh, we were the performances at Broadway Con were so fun, but we were also watching you on stage and like your reaction.
Watching you guys,
everybody, because
I'm glad it went over well, because it was a moment. It was like a in the moment decision where I was like, wait, I just want to watch this too. I don't want to like go stand on the side. But then halfway through, as we were sitting through this, I was like, there's a world where people are actually so irritated that we're behind them on this stage right now, because I forgot that like there was a screen happening.
It was great.
And like, you guys reacted also like you were rehearsed. Like, I was like, the reactions are in unison. They're complimenting each other. It was really fun.
It was perfect.
No, I think the most immediate goal for the podcast is obviously go to the Wicked movie premiere.
Yes!
That's going to be so fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. We didn't think we'd go this long, you know?
We were just talking about... Because the day that we're recording this, we just dropped our 50th episode today, and we were talking about how like there have been so many moments where this could have felt complete for us, but it's just like cool stuff keeps coming. And I think like we talked a long time ago, Quincy, one of the times it could have felt complete, and we were like, let's just keep going till this is our full-time job. Like, let's just like keep taking what's coming to us and see what happens. I mean, it's like we have our pipe dreams of like Adina, Kristen, Ari, Cynthia. Like, we'd love to have all them on the podcast.
I feel like you will get them 100%.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah.
Speaking it here. Yep.
Yeah. No, I'm like, if anywhere, it's your podcast. Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think it's, as long as it stays fun, and I think it's like a good way for Kevin and I to maintain our friendship. Because it's hard to see friends in real life. So now it's like, at least we get to sit on a microphone and talk to each other.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I think like we've been experiencing this too with like everyone's connected to Oz in some way. Mm-hmm. And that was like the big thing for us in the pandemic when everyone was like on sides of everything. I was like, well, Oz is like in the middle because like everyone loves Oz in like some way, or is, even if they don't love it, connected to it. You've had to. Like,
everyone's got a touch point.
That's what we said. When, even when we interview non-Wicked actresses, we still ask them what their Wicked touch point is, because especially if you're an actress, every Wicked has one, you know, every actress has one.
Yes, yes, yep. Or yes, I love it so much. Okay, we have to be you guys now and ask you our version of your question.
Ooh,
so, okay, you ready? So, you get four choices to pick between. Are you a Billy Burke witch? Are you a Margaret Hamilton witch? Ooh. Are you an Eveline? Or are you an Atta Pearl? Oh. You could pick, like, if you want to go on a 75% this with, like, a little 25%.
Like a sun, moon, rising.
Yeah, you can definitely give us your astrological witch sign.
That's a hard question.
I'll go first. I am going to pick Margaret Hamilton as my primary response. Because she holds a very unique place in like my development of loving musical theater, in that she is one of the four people in that movie who play a person in the real world and a person in Oz, and like opening up that kind of convention to me, and like I don't know, like seeing her play again, like these two villains in two different worlds. And I always just thought she was so scary and fabulous and just mean. Like, I just thought she did such a good job. And in the years since, I have grown to love Margaret Hamilton and like going on Mr. Rogers to be like, no, look, I'm not scary. And I just love that. And then I would say, you know, of course, a little teeny bit percent Billy Burke, just because.
Mm-hmm. Just because.
I love that
so much. Yeah.
But neither of them, well, I guess Billy Burke sings a little bit. So I would say Eveline and Atta Pearl, just because, like, they get to sing.
They get vocals.
Which is nice.
That's always a good thing.
Eveline was the first Wicked Witch of the West to sing.
Yes, that is so correct. That is so correct. Mm-hmm. I guess I never thought about it like that.
There were Glindas that had songs, but never Wicked Witches.
The witch was always an acting role. Back in the days where you were like, this is the
and
one who does not need to sing.
Yeah.
Now it's not. Yeah,
it couldn't be further.
Not the case. What is crazy is Margaret Hamilton really didn't like her work as Miss Gulch. That is something she would criticize. Because it was fast. She never thought about it. She was like, I think that's why it's really good, though. Because it's so
Yeah, interesting.
Love
her. I think my main is Eveline. Fun, chaotic, a little. Gets to sing the bops. With like a Billy Burke persona, I think.
Ooh.
So I can button it up, you know?
Oh, what a combo.
That's going to be my answer.
I can't wait to see what the Wiz is going to do. This new Wiz is going to do with like the costumes for those witches.
Oh my god! Yeah,
can't wait.
I'm so excited for them.
Y'all, this was so much fun.
This was
so fun. Thank you for having us on.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining.
For coming on over, neighbors.
And thank you for your podcast.
I learned so much.
Love your episodes.
No, thank you guys. Thank you guys, because like you said, the Oz love runs so deep in so many people and runs beyond Wicked if that's your touch point, or beyond MGM if that's your touch point. Mm-hmm. So I love that you guys are so devoted to loving all aspects of this.
And it's nice to be, I feel like we're getting ingratiated by the like Oz standard creators, which is nice. Because we're just the wicked gays.
We are honored so much.
Thank you we'll link all of your dates, listeners. Go check out Sentimental Men. Listen to every episode ever.
Please.
Please do. And rate and review when you do.
Rate and review.
Do awesome. It, baby.
All right, people. Have a good day.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thanks, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. We love linking arms with listeners like you.
Another special thank you to our Patreon Pod Squad members who have become our Bellina soup for the soul. Do you get it? And Oz family all across the globe. Consider joining us for as low as $3 a month. Patreon linked in show notes. More tiers and perks coming soon.
You can also find us over on IG at Down the Yellow Brick Pod and someday TikTok, and dropping Good Trouble Witch merch like it's hot on our Etsy shop. All links below. Shout out to our logo designer, Maddie Frank, for helping us make Oz nerddom fashion.
We'd like to dedicate this season to the late, great co-host Drew of the neighboring podcast of Slippers and Spindles, whose fairy tale enthusiasm always inspired ours. Blessed to have connected on Oz and Wicked and to have known you, Drew.
And lastly, if you are feeling the pod and haven't already, consider leaving us an Apple review. It truly makes our day. Each review also equals an entry into our big blowout end of the season giveaway. You won't want to miss this one, which will be completely swankified.
As always, all previous reviews will also be considered in our entries. We got you, boo.
See you over the rainbow soon.
In a clock tick.